From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, Mayor Gavin Newsom joins us in studio for a wide-ranging discussion about the state of the city and the upcoming California State Supreme Court decision on Proposition 8, the ban on same-sex marriages. We'll also talk with the mayor about his gubernatorial ambitions and about San Francisco's half-billion-dollar budget deficit and where and how to find vitally needed revenues for the city. The mayor joins us with your calls and emails next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. We're joined in studio for this morning's opening hour of Forum by, I should say, with the mayor of the city and county of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom. Good morning, Mayor Newsom. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me in.
And we should mention that Gavin Newsom is now a man who works on radio as well.
Yeah,
the competition.
Unbelievable. Half hour on a Saturday at 11. You know what those Saturday at 11 slots are all about, Michael, right?
Well, but you have your following if people want to know what's going on. And, I mean, it's not like Jerry Brown or Roger Hedgecock who made their names in radio, but you may someday, too.
No, you start with your half hour. I was half hour at noon. Now they put me up to primetime Saturday at 11 a.m. It's very, you know, it's fun.
You enjoy it, don't you?
I love it because you get a lot of, I mean, as you know, when you get folks on the radio, forces you to focus a little bit differently about other people and other topics you may not be familiar with. I'm reading books that I never would imagine reading because I'm trying to get folks on that I never would, that I'm not particularly interested in that topic, but I'm forcing myself to indulge in understanding the complexities of issues that I wouldn't otherwise focus on. And as a consequence, I'm learning more than I ever could have imagined learning, and I'm enjoying the process.
It's I heard you talking about a topic you knew a lot about, which was all the social networking and Twittering. And
You get the CEO of Twitter on. In fact, we Twittered about being on the show today, and I've got 6,000+ people that we said call in. We actually gave the number here to folks, encourage them to come.
We'll screen them. We'll make sure they're not.
I'm sure you will. And they're not all friends. Trust me. So it actually is a dangerous thing. Facebook, the same thing. The folks at Facebook and YouTube, the CEO of YouTube, we had, and others. It's an amazing wealth, as you know, the San Francisco Bay Area. It's extraordinary, the folks and the talent we have out here, particularly though in this whole social networking space.
Wealth in the San Francisco Bay Area, but a $1 billion deficit in the San Francisco city and county. We'll get to that. We want to talk budget with you. But first, I need to congratulate you, though. You and Jennifer, exciting news. Going to be a father and mother. And
yes. Thank you.
First child. And how exciting that is.
It's when you do that that scan and they you hear the heartbeat, which I just did last week. That's, you know, they can intellectualize to prepare you for that. But when you actually hear it and you hear that beat going, that's a pretty powerful and special thing. So for everyone that's gone through it,
now, you know,
I know, I always say, I was like, oh, that's cute and wonderful. Then it happens to you. My gosh, it's pretty powerful. So I'm very excited.
Where do you hear the cries waking up in the middle of the night?
That's not so exciting.
Well, we've got a big decision coming up by the Supreme Court, and you, of course, are getting in the spotlight once again because of it, because you've become so identified with same-sex marriages. And now Proposition 8 is coming up to the Supreme Court again. Any predictions from you?
It's going to be tough. I mean, it's a really powerful argument. I think the one that the city and county of San Francisco is making, good work of Teresa Stewart, our deputy city attorney in particular, and Dennis Herrera, our city attorney, are making, and that is whether or not Prop 8 was a revision to the Constitution or an amendment. It was passed as an amendment. A revision requires, however, two-thirds of the legislature, both branches of the legislature, to first make the determination that it should go in front of the voters. If indeed it was a revision, then the process was inappropriate and this could be overturned. If the court decides it was an amendment, a simple amendment, then obviously we're going to fall short. The attorney general has a different argument. He's actually going to be arguing against us and our principle that this was a revision, interestingly. And then he's come up with his third way argument, which is the notion of inalienable rights. And there has to be some compelling state interest to overturn someone's inalienable rights. And it's very much a Brown-esque argument. And it's an interesting intellectual argument, and I'm happy that he's making it. But it's a separate argument from the one that the counties are making, not just San Francisco City and County, but other counties that have joined our lawsuit.
He may be your competition if you do decide to throw your hat in the governorship. In fact, some are saying that right now he's got a leg up. I saw John Garamendi recently, and he said, what, are we going back to the future here with Jerry Brown?
But it's interesting. John said that, who I admire greatly as well.
And he's also a candidate. I mean, it's going to be a tough race.
I hope so. I think it should be. And I think it's good for the people of the state of California to have a lot of choices. And I think there's nothing worse than a foregone conclusion. I think Hillary Clinton discovered that, that people don't want to be to have been assumed to have already made a decision based upon name ID or today's public opinion poll. I think there's a reason you have a campaign, and this campaign will be a long campaign. As you say, a number of people have already jumped in. That's just the Democratic side, and you have on the Republican side three candidates already firmly established.
Meg Whitman, Poizner,
And Tom Campbell.
Oh, Tom Campbell.
Yeah, he's already in. So it's going to be a crowded
field.
Don't
forget my old friend Tom Campbell. Are you in?
I've got an exploratory campaign, and we've been up and down the state doing town halls. And the purpose of it is to legitimately – I really disdain politicians that can't answer directly questions like that. So let me acknowledge that I'm not answering that question directly, but I'm also answering it honestly. We put a real exploratory committee together with the whole idea of actually going up and down the state to get a sense of where people are, because I'm not naive to San Francisco and San Francisco values. I'm not naive to the issue you brought up at the top of this hour, and that's gay marriage and how that resonates in Placer County or San Joaquin Valley or other parts of the state. And I'm not naive about other issues, the sanctuary city and work we've done on immigration policy and what we've done in terms of health policy and the impact that's had in terms of our approach and on the private sector and small business community. And so all those things need to be calculated before I jump in. And we're doing that as we speak. And I think in the next couple months, I'll have a firm assessment and make a decision.
Senator Feinstein almost intimated that you were responsible for allowing George Bush to be reelected president.
Yeah, that was a great way to wake up.
But there are many in the No on 8 campaign who feel that that ad really was where you said whether you like it or not. And there were a lot of people who reacted negatively to it. And
you can't win.
Probably hurt you politically, hasn't
it? Yeah, sure, it does. I'm not naive about that either. You know, the interesting thing about that, it was taken out of context. I was talking about the history of the civil rights movement. I was talking about, in particular, as it relates to whether you like it or not, what was going on in 1967 with the bans against interracial marriage and the fact that 70% of Americans opposed interracial marriage when, quote-unquote, activist Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, overturned the laws banning interracial marriage in 16 states in the Loving versus the state of Virginia case. Whether you liked it or not, the courts moved in a different direction. But the ad nonetheless was effective. But I think arguably, and I say this with some objectivity, and I think all the polling that's been done and post-analysis, the most compelling argument, pro-8 argument, was that ad with the young princess, fairy princess, that young girl that was dressed up as a fairy princess and a mother coming home talking about how she learned about other fairy princesses and the fact that they're going to change the curriculum in the school books and the textbooks in our public schools. And
they also got a lot of mileage out of that marriage that took place at City Hall.
Yeah, they got a little of that. And, you know, that was regretful because the way it was manipulated, but it wasn't regretful because two people that loved each other were able to live their lives out loud and get married. And the fact that people surprised them out on the steps of City Hall to celebrate, you know, it was unfortunate.
Were you surprised so many people were upset?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. Look, I understand politics as much or more than anybody. I've been doing this a long time. So, no, I wasn't surprised by that. But, you know, I'm disappointed because, again, you know, we get so consumed, and I understand why. You want to be successful. You don't want to just be imprudent in terms of your approach. You want to actually produce a result. And I'm all for hard-headed pragmatism. But, you know, there's an ideal here that we advanced, and we were successful advancing, and that is the notion that of full equality for everyone, regardless of race or gender, in this case, in addition to that, sexual orientation. And we were successful. And 18,000 couples came together across their differences, and tens of thousands of members of their family successfully advanced that principle by saying, I do. And then it was a small group of people that put an initiative on the ballot, and we failed. We failed to run an effective campaign. We also failed, in addition to that, to run an effective strategy that actually convinced people, including members of my own family, that separate is not equal, that civil unions are not marriage, and that you cannot have a separate institution and call it equal. And that is something that we continue to have to struggle uphill to convince the majority of Californians, let alone Americans, of.
We have Kenneth Starr saying the will of the people is that these should not be marriages.
Boy, Kenneth Starr, of all people, the guy who prosecutes the impeachment of Bill Clinton, is now arguing to support the will of the voters, in this case, California Prop 8. This has always been a state on the leading and cutting edge. Talk about turning the page, to take Obama's phrase. We've always been out there as a state of innovation and entrepreneurship and a discovery. And here we are becoming the first state in the United States of America's history to have a constitutional amendment to strip rights away from a protected class, a suspect class, a class of individuals that have been historically discriminated against, who got their rights advanced, and then we just stripped them away and took them. And no state has ever done that. It's just not the California that I think my great-grandfather moved into. It was always, you know, that spirit of even our city, the foundation in the 1850s of people coming here for riches and new beginnings. That spirit was broken, I think, when we set a course moving in a completely different direction with Prop 8. And again, I respect the rights of a majority, but I also respect that we need to protect the rights of a minority against the whims of a majority. And that's why we have a court system. And thank God we have a constitution. And that's what's at peril, the constitutional question. Is it constitutional democracy, or is it just a pure democracy? And that's the question the Supreme Court's going to be asked.
Talking to Mayor Gavin Newsom, talk show host, father-to-be, and we'll, of course, have you join us soon enough. But I mentioned the $500 million deficit, $500 million.
Yeah.
And back in February, earlier, around the middle of the month, you said, we're not in a crisis, but we're acting as if we're in a crisis.
That's right.
We're not in a crisis?
No, we took care of our mid-year problems. We actually, in the current fiscal year, are not in a crisis. We made a $118 million adjustment to our budget. It was not easy. And we, as a consequence of that, moved away from being in a crisis to having a big challenge into the next fiscal year of solving a budget problem that is now roughly $460 million. So as we move forward deliberatively between now and June 1st to balance that budget, we can do it in a way that I think can provide for some confidence that we'll not only get through the next fiscal year, but we'll invest and grow our economy with a stimulus strategy that will actually turn this economy around in a shorter run than what we're seeing in the state and federal level, so that we can actually weather the subsequent years.
Stimulus strategy like the stimulus package?
Well, it just occurred to me, you know, you have a federal stimulus, but there was nothing in the state of California. Here you have almost a $2 trillion economy, the state of California, one of the wealthiest states, the wealthiest state and the wealthiest democracy in the world. And there was not a word about an economic stimulus in this state. I know we don't get to print money, and I understand that distinction, but that doesn't stop the state from borrowing money or taxing people to take more money, let alone the ability for them to swipe more money from the cities and counties to balance their books. But nothing in the context of stimulus. So we decided to step into that void, and we said, look, where are our existing dollars that we're already going to spend, federal dollars and state dollars that are already going to be drawn down, we can't use for discretionary purposes, but can we use them more wisely to stimulate growth and job creation and job retention? And we put together a 15-point stimulus strategy that includes sending out tens of millions of dollars of zero interest loans. If this is a liquidity crisis and a credit crisis, and foundationally and principally it is, how do we support those businesses that are barely making ends meet, that can't pay their utility bills, let alone pay their leases? How can we support them to do that and potentially increase their payroll by hiring more folks? And so we're distributing those dollars as we speak. And in the next few weeks, we'll be doing micro enterprise loans, targeted small business loans. We've got a payroll tax exemption for net new jobs that we're offering. We're promoting other strategies to take advantage of state and federal dollars, that a lot of dollars are not being drawn down that can be drawn down more locally. A lot of interesting ideas that we think can actually grow our economy and weather the storm a little bit better.
So it's a liquidity and credit crisis, but not a crisis?
Well, it's a budget crisis is, you know, we use, Michael, this is How many – I've been on this show. I probably use this, and let me apologize. When things are going great, we throw out crisis about every darn problem. We say we have crisis of our sidewalks, crisis of trees not being cut back, crisis of street poles that have graffiti on it.
Well, let's not use that signifier, but when you have $100 million cut from the health department, it sounds pretty serious.
Oh, it's very serious.
And you need more revenue stream,
but
obviously.
A budget crisis is what the state of California just dealt with. They had a crisis. They couldn't pay their bills. That's a crisis. We can pay our bills. San Francisco's of our $6.6 billion budget. We are paying our bills. We're spending more than any other city in the United States of America, not even within the margin of error. $2.2 billion a year in health and human services. We're doing as much or more than anybody. We just rebuilt our public hospital at Laguna Honda, our long-term aging facility, and are making an investment with bonds that we're just selling on San Francisco General Hospital. We're going to put more money this year on primary care for our health initiative than any city in America. We're going to do more on housing of homeless. We have a huge budget deficit, and it will feel like a crisis to those that see some programs cut, no question about it. But I just think we should caution that there's this hyperbole that makes us make bad decisions when we say we're in a crisis. The crisis will exist if we don't act deliberatively and thoughtfully and judiciously. And that's what we have time to do. We had a crisis in December. We dealt with that mid-year crisis. We had a cash flow problem. That's behind us. What's in front of us are tough decisions. But I would not call it a crisis. It's a challenge, and it is a big problem, but not a crisis.
Talking with Mayor Gavin Newsom. Why veto the June special election to bring the issue of new taxes before the voters? It almost sounds like the GOP, no taxes, no how, no
way. Quite the contrary. I actually want to get something done, back to hard-headed pragmatism and not delusion. I won't even call it idealism. I mean, let's state the obvious. As we were determining whether or not we were going to put a special election on the June ballot, at the exact same time, the state was talking about increasing its sales tax, the same tax we wanted to increase locally. It required 2/3 of the voters of San Francisco to support that sales tax increase. And it's the same one the state moved forward by increasing themselves. The likelihood of doing that was 0%. So why were we withdrawing common sense in the context of advancing a principle that's important? We need more revenue, but let's do it right, and let's do it with the next regularly scheduled election.
Supervisors will do it anyway, though, won't they?
Oh, they may, but it would be making a gigantic mistake. They're not going to get 2/3 of the voters to tax poor people. What's a sales tax? It's the most regressive tax that exists. And I'm not going to sit there and advance a tax that hurts poor people and folks on fixed income disproportionately so that we can, with respect, continue the politics of the status quo at City Hall. If we're going to do new revenue, let's A, do something the voters will support that's not regressive and doesn't hurt poor people, that actually will produce a result that will also advance our efforts to reform the way we do business. We have to do things differently, or we will end up in a real crisis. And it's not just a crisis of confidence that we can continue to do the level of service provisions that we're advancing now, but the inability to even do some of the basic things that everyone's come to expect unless we dramatically change the way we do business. We could do that in November. No one's going to be a bigger supporter and promoter of that than myself, and we've already got a group working on a November strategy, revenue and reform.
Would you support a special election for the selling off of condo conversion permits for revenue?
We won't need to do that. You can do that legislatively. You can actually enact that by a simple majority of the Board of Supervisors.
You going to do that?
I certainly believe there's a principal argument to do that. Good people can disagree in this circumstance. It's a way of generating a lot of revenue, keeping health clinics open, and keeping some of our programs for the poorest among us open. But there's an ideological war against it, and I understand that. I've been doing this for almost 14 years, the longest serving elected official in local government. So I understand that's not going to be easy, and I'm not convinced that the majority of the board will support that idea.
Let me talk to you quickly about something we talked about just yesterday and something we're going to be talking about in the next hour. Yesterday, we talked about Assemblyman Amiano's bill that's been put forward for recreational use of marijuana, or essentially taxing and regulating marijuana for recreational use. If you were governor, would you sign that bill?
Yeah. First of all, it's preempted by federal law, so let's just establish that framework. It's not a legitimate effort in the context of the result that it's intending. I think it's a good debate to have, and I think it's an appropriate debate, and particularly in light of the budget crisis that, again, has been solved for the moment in Sacramento, but may loom large in the next few months if the economy continues in this downward spiral. They're looking at potentially $1 billion a year in tax revenue in the state of California alone through this initiative. I'll take a backseat to no one in terms of my support of medicinal marijuana, and we have been very strong in our advocacy towards that. Legalizing it has all kinds of unintended consequences and problems, and I think that it's not surprising that former supervisor, now Assemblyman Almiano, is advancing it.
But we're reading that the Obama administration is letting up on enforcement.
On the enforcement of medicinal marijuana, but they were quite clear, in fact, very specifically clear when asked about California legislation. When they said that Obama during the campaign, they said, go to our campaign website. And that's interestingly, they didn't take it head on. They said go to the campaign website where the president said, I'm opposed to legalizing marijuana.
Did Obama snub you at the waterfront, by the way?
No.
Do you know about this story? It's supposedly Ben Smith floated this rumor around that he wouldn't take a photograph with you.
And no, I mean, how many people didn't take photographs of me for years? I mean, you mentioned one of my closest political friends and allies and someone I have enormous respect for, Dianne Feinstein, who I had dinner with the night of the election, only to find out 2 hours after we had dinner at Moose's restaurant that she was saying that I'm responsible for George Bush's
Did you pick up
success.
The check?
Thank God I didn't under the circumstances. But, you know, look, I was persona non grata for years, not just with the Republican Party, my own party. So I think that's an isolated example, and it hardly should be just isolated to one particular candidate for, at the time, U.S. Senate.
Well, we're going to be talking in the next hour with Reverend Amos Brown and Cecil Williams and Sophie Maxwell about the black migration from San Francisco, population going down and
important.
Continuing to decline. And I know you've set up a task force.
Yeah, they've worked on it.
Amos Brown is talking about the necessity of a Marshall Plan. I mean, this sounds
serious. Well, he's been part of
serious.
I hope that he talks about the work he's done on our task force and the work he did to put together a lot of the principles that we've been advancing. You know, some of the work we've done on universal health care. It's disproportionately helping the African-American community. Our working families tax credit disproportionately allows working families to keep more of what they're earning, only one in the United States, disproportionately helping the African-American community. Hope SF, rebuilding public housing, the first one at Hunter's View, West Point, Middle Point, the next one Sunnydale and Potrero and other parts of the city. The effort there disproportionately helping African-American families. This is one of the greatest housing initiatives the city's ever engaged in. $100 million we put up, local dollars, just a year and a half ago because of their work on the African-American task force. We've done the same thing on universal preschool, disproportionately helping the African-American and, interestingly, the Latino and Asian communities. All of these things are very significant, and all of these things deserve, I think, some credit and critique as it relates to the city's very, very aggressive strategy to do what we can, including, interestingly, to right the wrongs of the past in terms of redevelopment. The redevelopment agency, led by Fred Blackwell, is also helping with this task force, and one of our leaders has done a magnificent job, I think. Though I know the Reverend has some critique and concerns in the margins, I think the broad strokes, they've made a lot of impact, including this. When folks were kicked out under the redevelopment plans of the 50s and 60s, they never came back. They had these certificates to come back and to get housing. They never did because they were ultimately displaced. We actually became, I think, the first city in the United States that actually gives a priority not just to housing within a redevelopment area, but goes back to those families, not just the principals, but their kids generationally, and says, if you have those certificates, you're going to get priority into our entire affordable housing program throughout the city and county of San Francisco. Another principal came out of that task force that I think is part of the spirit of a Marshall Plan that the Reverend will be talking about.
Talking with Mayor Gavin Newsom, and you can talk with the mayor. In fact, let me invite you to join us. Our lines are available, and if you have a question or comment you'd like to direct to Gavin Newsom, please feel free to join the program. It's toll-free. Wherever you're listening to us or however, radio, internet, Sirius, XM, satellite, join the program, 866-733-6786. Again, we welcome your calls. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending the hour with the mayor of the city and county of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom. not yet a declared gubernatorial candidate, but exploring the possibilities. And there are a number of Democrats who are probably doing the same. Mayor Villaraigosa of Los Angeles and Loretta Sanchez has filed papers, and John Garamendi, as we said. We're talking pretty much about a wide range of topics, as we do when the mayor is with us. And let's go to our first caller, who's joining us from Albany. Renee, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me on. I just had a quick question for Gavin. In theory, if he goes ahead and runs for governor, I'm wondering if he had any comments today about the state of Proposition 13. Yeah. And how that may or may not have contributed to the collapse in California for real estate prices and the budget problems that we're going to have in the next few years. If he gets elected, does he think as governor he's going to need to change Proposition 13? And if so, how?
Good luck.
Off the air.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, lots have talked about changing Prop 13, but it doesn't seem very likely.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely except in this instance. And you recall Warren Buffett was standing there with then newly elected Governor Schwarzenegger and talked about the
Milton role. Friedman economics personified with those two.
Huh? You got it. And remember, the governor initiated the request and requirement to do push-ups the next time Buffett ever brings up the issue of Prop 13 again. And he did, because he talked about something that people are talking about all up and down the state. Everywhere I'm going, I'm hearing the same thing. Isn't it time to focus at least on this part of Prop 13? And that's the commercial side, mm-hmm. not the residential side, as you said, good luck, but the commercial side. And I'm hearing more and more about people's desire, and surprising that I'm hearing it in certain parts and pockets of the state, not just out in the more progressive coastal areas, but in the inland areas as well, that it's high time to consider it. But I think the question of the budget in relationship to Prop 13, I think you can ask the same question about the vehicle license fee in relationship to this budget crisis. The VLF that was rolled back between 1948 and 1998, it was at 2%, was rolled back in 98 to 0.65%. Governor Davis, because it was temporarily rolled back, decides to bring it back to the full 2%, his historic high. It exacerbated the conditions that led to his recall. Governor Schwarzenegger came in and said he will, by executive order, roll it back down to 0.65%. He did that. And you literally, over the course of the last 4 and 5 years, lost tens of billions of dollars because the state had to backfill the reduction in revenue they were generating from the VLF by funding the cities and counties where that dollars were going. And that has probably more disproportionately impacted our budget deficit and the one we know today than any other issue. And of course, the irony of ironies is he just increased it himself. From 0.65% to 1.15% because he felt there was no other way out of this current budget mess.
On we go to Rob. Rob, you're on.
Hi. I have a question regarding the crisis in the San Francisco city budget. It seems that we have an acute problem right now, but given the salaries and the benefits that are paid to city employees, it seems like it's going to be a chronic problem going forward. And I haven't seen much political leadership on cutting salaries or benefits. What is your perspective on that?
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to let you know what we've done. We're looking at $90 million in wage. My friends at Labor don't like concessions, but I'll use loosely concessions. We're in the midst of negotiation with all of our labor leaders and have been for a number of months. We already have negotiated. For example, our Teamsters and the supervisory nurses have already contributed what is their percentage of that total $90 million of wage concessions. Other labor unions will in the next few weeks and months be announcing the same, and I have great expectation that everybody will step up to the plate. In addition to that, I've made some very controversial decisions that have been criticized because we are addressing the issue of wage and benefit costs because we've been moving forward with layoffs. I have initiated over 1,100 layoffs in the last 7 months in total. That's an aggregate number, over 300 just last week. This is very difficult. These are real people, real families that are impacted by these decisions, but they're necessary decisions under these very difficult circumstances. Most of those 1,100, nonetheless, are not they're mostly positions, not people, but increasingly as we move towards our June 1st balanced budget, you're going to see even more layoffs to come.
Let me thank you, Rob, and let me go to another caller right away. In San Francisco, Mark, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me on the phone.
Sure.
When I heard the mayor say this is not a crisis, it reminds me of John McCain saying the fundamentals of our economy are sound. That worked out very well. His local stimulus is all supply side. There's no demand side putting money in folks' pockets to buy stuff. How can you support business if no one's buying things? What? He's AWOL on stabilizing city budget. He's attacking SEIU. Let's go for a four-day work week instead. He's opposing tax increases on the wealthy to balance our budget, which if he and his allies supported, we can get with 11 votes of the board and the mayor's support. That's only 50% plus one bar to reach. He's taking Prop 8 dollars from Muni, giving it to all his departments. If he wants to channel Mitch McConnell by playing supply-side economic issues to run for governor, what use do we have here in San Francisco for this mayor under our current Keynesian moment, which means demand-side stimulus for people, not for corporations?
Okay, I'm sure this is a first. You've been compared to Mitch McConnell and John McCain in one call.
No, it just I don't even know where to begin. I mean, taxes on the wealthy? You mean sales tax that hurts the poor? I don't for the life of me understand attacking SEIU. We've been engaging SEIU and working with them, hoping that we can get $90 million in wage concessions to protect the poorest among us so we can keep our health clinics open. No one has been more forthright in supporting new revenue than myself, but I want to do it in a way that it gets two-thirds of the vote. One of the things that I was remiss, Michael, mentioning as it relates to the special election, the only way you can go forward with a special election is you've got to waive the provisions under Prop 218. You've got to call for a state of emergency. And as a consequence of that, you open yourself up to massive lawsuits by the proponents of Prop 218. We'd be the first county in the state of California to do this. Look, I don't want to risk the ire of lawsuits and risk the chance of losing. I actually want to succeed, but I don't want to tax the poorest among us. I don't want to have regressive taxes being promoted by even the caller in his support of what the Board of Supervisors was doing. I'm not attacking anybody. I'm trying to attack the problem. We made tough choices in the mid-year. We're going to continue to make tough choices in the next few months to avoid a crisis. Again, we hardly sound like John McCain talking about the fundamentals, and I'm not sure he read the stimulus plan. If he reads the stimulus plan, he'll see that we're putting tens of millions of dollars in the hands of people to create more liquidity and opportunity that people can meet their payrolls, small businesses up and down our city that are suffering. And these are the folks that were creating the jobs. You can't be pro-job and anti-business. You've got to have someone to hire someone. And that's why we need to support our small businesses. And that's why these are targeted microloans. And they're disproportionately, almost exclusively helping small and medium-sized businesses. In addition, we want to increase the working families tax credit. And we want to increase the ability for folks to get more money in their pocket by getting them out of check cashing places and into banking institutions so that they don't have to pay these usurious fees at these payday loan places that they're currently paying, all part of the stimulus. So if you read it and took the time to read it, I think you'll see something a little bit different than what the caller clearly was trying to advance in
terms
of.
You think it'll enhance liquidity, that it'll bring in more revenue?
Well, I believe it can. I believe that what's the reason we're doing it. If the idea is to, you know, there are a lot of businesses that are looking to leave this city. They've got choices to move anywhere. You've got all this space that's coming up throughout the Bay Area, across the state, and around the rest of this country. There are decisions that are being made as we speak. And if we go down the path that we usually go down, and that is we're just going to take, we're not going to do anything to support these small folks, these businesses, and support other businesses who are looking to losing, we're going to be in a much more difficult position. Where does the revenue come from? I mean, I'm a progressive Democrat, but I'm not an anti-business Democrat. Maybe it's because I actually created jobs and I understand the
sacrifice. Well, you were a businessman before you were a mayor.
Yeah. And, you know, I have respect for business people. I don't have disrespect for them. I see all these.
Some of your progressives think you have too much respect for business people.
Well, I mean, it's the irony. I mean, our tax base, because we're, you know, our unemployment rate, it's going to go up, but it's 6.6%. The state's at 10.1. This Friday, it will go up. It's a question of, is it closer to 7 or closer to 8%? That has a direct impact on our ability to invest in healthcare, invest in anti-poverty programs, the same thing that the caller and others are advocating for. But the money doesn't just come from nowhere. It comes from somewhere, and it's very specific of where it comes from. And we've got to support these folks that are on the verge, literally, of going out of business, their entire life savings being wiped out, their families being uprooted and destroyed, and our community fabric being hurt. And so I think what we're doing is wise and prudent under the circumstances.
But you're also backed against the wall, as I alluded to earlier. You're having to take $100 million away from healthcare, which has been one of the major showcases of achievement as mayor.
Yeah, and but we haven't
done
that.
You got more people out of work. You got more people who are going to need healthcare.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet. I mean, we're the only city in the United States of America with universal healthcare, and we're going to expand it this year. We've gotten over 8,800 human beings off the street since I've become mayor, homeless folks, and we're going to expand our supportive housing this year. There are going to be programs that have to be cut because we simply have no choice. We have a math problem. We can't borrow and spend, and we can't tax and spend. The voters can only tax themselves. And under Prop 218, they can only do it at certain periods of time unless you create these emergency provisions and you go in a foolhardy way of trying to get two-thirds of the voters to support a tax increase that already was increased by the state of California. So we'll have a challenging time, but we'll do it in a prudent and thoughtful way. I've got smart department heads that care deeply about people and the programs that they've actually created and helped advance. And we're going to be strategic about it. But we have not cut $100 million in health care, though that is the prospect if we don't make tough decisions in the next few weeks and months that I know will be controversial. We can't wait to solve this budget mess. If we wait, it will get bigger and bigger.
We go to more of your calls. Jason, in a car phone in San Francisco. We hope you're pulled to the side of the road, Jason. Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. How are you doing?
Good, Jason.
Listen, my question is about the sanctuary policy for San Francisco. There's been a lot of talk about the African-American population declining, and I tend to feel that with the sanctuary policy is that you're putting undocumented aliens before you are our own San Francisco citizens. And so I'm wondering if you feel there's some sort of decline because of the fact that African-Americans aren't getting the jobs that are going to undocumented aliens.
All right, Jason, we got a bad connection there, but I thank you for the call. There's also a great deal of concern that was prompted after that homicide of a family by El Salvador, illegal or undocumented, depending on your political position of semantics. And you got a lot of heat for sanctuary as a result of that.
Yeah, well, Sanctuary City's been around since 1979. It was established by then Mayor Dianne Feinstein as a city of refuge. Almost every big city, in fact, every big city in the state of California and almost every big city in the United States of America is a sanctuary city. You heard, for example, Rudy Giuliani himself in the Republican debates defending his sanctuary city in New York City. All the big cities have sanctuary cities. It's hardly unique to San Francisco. I'm not going to pit the African-American community against the Latino community in the context of jobs, though I certainly respect the fact that there's concern about the limited number of jobs, and that whole idea is then to increase the job base and increase the opportunity for people to access those jobs. But we believe the sanctuary city actually keeps people safer. We keep people healthier. And the whole idea is to educate folks that otherwise wouldn't get an education because they're fearful of immigration raids. They're fearful of going into community clinic to get an immunization because of raids, and they're fearful of reporting to the police crimes that may have been committed that they're witnesses of because of the policies of the federal government in relationship to immigration. And so we have created a system that, again, exists in these other cities that we believe protects the public and protects individuals from threats. That being said, you can't break the law in a sanctuary city. You can't commit a felony. And if you do, there'll be consequences, including cooperation with the federal authorities. And I know that people have criticized me for changing a policy where juveniles historically were not turned over to the federal authorities that committed felonies. And I just believe we have to do the same thing we've done for years with our adult system, with our juvenile system. It shouldn't be a place to come and escape prosecution from committing violent crimes. That's what the sanctuary city was never conceived of to do that.
How's the city doing in general with respect to violent crimes? I know it was a priority for you, and so numbers are not still heartening.
No, they're way down this year, way down. And not 10%, 20, 30, 40. We were down 50% a few weeks ago. We're down about 50% now. Violent crime went down again last year, went down the previous year.
It's in the Bayview?
Yeah, and Bayview went down again. What's happened is homicides, and again, violent crime goes down. Homicides have been creeping up. Last year, they were down a tiny bit. This year, they're down substantially. And I knock on wood. I mean, as we speak, those stats can change. But we have something called the zone strategy, and we're seeing a lot of impact and effect of this zone strategy, particularly in the Western Addition, Viz Valley, and Baby Hunters Point. We had a big—
It's like basketball, police taking zones?
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally, in this case, it's about bringing your specialty units, your tactical units, your gang units, your Honda and Solo units, and saturating areas. It's getting the CHP to partner with you and the federal authorities. It's about by-bus strategies, undercover strategies, as well as just more uniform police presence.
How are we doing with Chief Fong's replacement?
We're making progress. I met with the chief yesterday. We'll have a smooth transition. We hope that happens in April. It may happen in May or June, but the chief has assured me she'll make sure it's a smooth transition. No one has appropriated herself better than Chief Fong. I've been so impressed by her commitment, her loyalty to the city, to her job, and she lives and breathes this. Every homicide, every shooting is very personal to her, and I'm very, very proud of her tenure, and I'm proud of her hard work, and look forward to making the decision in the next few months as a new police chief.
A lot of emails. Let's see if we can go through some of them. Here's Kevin, who writes, I have tried to get an appointment with the mayor as a garden variety citizen for several months. Exasperated, I asked his head scheduler for a list of those persons who, like myself, feel that we should have access to the man we elected. I asked for a list of those he has met within this term who were A, not making donations for his next run, B, not meeting as part of their job, C, not well-connected and or wealthy. His head scheduler has yet to provide said list. So what's the deal, Mr. Mayor? I want to talk to you about cops never being on muni, though it's part of the job and they're supposed to be there, and another 8-day today concerns, and have a better shot at meeting the Prime Minister of England.
Yeah, well, I hope that...
call in, by the way. That's what he should do.
Yeah, right? No, and the reality, I mean, I'm looking at my schedule right now. No one made a political contribution on this list, and no one is got some insight. Every single day, I have 21 meetings, and I'm as accessible as any human being. In fact, I go on, and I let people know my public schedule is public, and folks grab me on the streets. I walk the streets probably as much or more than any previous mayor, but I also have these town hall meetings all the time. I'm surprised that he's not aware of these. I was just down in Western Addition with a town hall meeting. We had one in the Mission with the new supervisor, David Campos, and Bevan Dufty. We're doing these every month out in the community, and I hope you can participate in one of those town halls that we're doing.
Kevin, since you become mayor, this is from Bill, when I go to the parks with my child, I don't see any improvement in the facilities. When I take the muni, it's still just as unreliable. When I go to the main library, the building and its surroundings are brimming with homeless people. When I walk down the streets, I see just as much graffiti as before your tenure.
Wow.
Given your performance and results on the ground, how can you be thinking of running for governor?
Well, it's interesting. Muni's on-time performance today just went up to 72.7%, the highest it's been in two decades. It's not even close to where it needs to be, and I understand people rolling their eyes saying, well, didn't you promise 85%? You're right. We all did as voters a number of years ago, well before I was mayor, but it's the highest it's been. We just opened up our 9th new branch library down in the Portola district on Saturday. That's the 9th out of 24 that are being completely remodeled and redone as world-class community centers, not just libraries. And we've had over 80 parks been completely redone. In fact, we did a citizen survey of our parks, and we got a B+, the highest citizen survey in our city's history in terms of the quality and maintenance of our parks. So interesting choice on these three key areas where we've made progress. And on the graffiti, let me say, we actually hired a third-party independent group to determine the amount of garbage and graffiti in our city streets with a very stated goal of reducing it by 50%. Last year, they announced the results of that. We're already about 30% reduction in terms of the last 2 years. Empirical independent analysis of our graffiti and garbage. Still too much on the streets. I still think we can do better in muni. We still have challenges in our libraries and our parks. He's not wrong to criticize. But again, if we look objectively, there's been an enormous amount of objective progress in all of those three, four areas.
Here's Jason. Proposition P was passed with 86% of San Francisco voters supporting a thorough cleanup of toxics and radioactive waste from the Hunters Point shipyard to the highest standards. The Presidio has been cleaned up to those standards, yet the Navy is talking about leaving more than 1.5 million tons of toxic and radioactive waste adjacent to the Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood. The mayor and his staff seem more interested in the 49er stadium than in the environmental cleanup at the shipyard. Question, will the mayor insist that the Navy remove the toxics and radioactive material from the landfill at the shipyard that sits along the bay at sea level in one of the most seismically active zones in the world?
Well, I couldn't be more pleased to be on the show because it's incredible the misinformation that's out there. We have drawn down more federal money in the last 5 years than in the last 25 years. The last five mayors, not even close to drawing down federal money to clean up the toxics in Bayview Hunters Point. We're about to announce another $82 million of federal money to clean up the toxics in Bayview Hunters Point. Over $340 million through last year will be north of $400 million this year in cleanup of the Bayview Hunters Point. This is unprecedented. I have spent probably more time and attention in terms of federal lobbying on this than anything else. Nothing concerns me more about the conditions out in the Southeast sector. This goes to your next guests. What we have done there to deal with prostate cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer rates is related, so much of it is related to the dumps, to the toxicity, to the power plants out in the Southeast sector. We've closed down one of the power plants. We've got a strategy to close the second one down. We are making progress on remediation, and we're rebuilding that community, and we've got a strategy under Prop G that wasn't just for the 49ers. It was for 10,000 housing units, 36% of them affordable, unprecedented number, rebuilding public housing in the old Alice Griffin housing sites with mixed income housing guaranteed that no one is displaced, real job requirements, real workforce training requirements, new parks and playgrounds, and new R&D space for green technology. This is not talk. This is something we've substantively organized around. So we've made a lot of progress, not just rhetoric. I could sit there at a rally. I could pass a resolution yelling and screaming at folks. But we actually have kind of come up with a different strategy of actually getting real dollars, creating real jobs, and organizing a real strategy that I think is something that everyone that supported Prop P should be very proud of.
I think you're ready for maybe a couple positive emails here.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, I like the negative because I'm able to at least answer to some of the myths and the critiques.
As Jim says, I attended your exploratory meeting in San Carlos last month. I hope you run. I'd like to see a new renaissance of clean manufacturing of green technologies within the city, creating jobs within the city, making green and energy efficient products for use within the city in California. Interested in hearing your thoughts about how the federal focus and stimulus on green energy and clean tech will help San Francisco directly. And that's one. Here's Christopher says, congratulations to the mayor on the expected arrival of his first child. Question, instead of marriage for everyone, why not push for no marriage at all? This will create true equality. Thanks for all your efforts at beautifying, renewing, and renovating our parks. It's noticeable and appreciated.
Good. I appreciate that.
And please do your best to keep staff at Reckon Park, to keep families in San Francisco. It's imperative that we have places to send our children when the public school day ends. Thanks for your service to our city.
Well, this is a tough, you know, we're going to have some layoffs of rec directors, but we've got a new strategy, and I hope people focus not just on the layoffs, but this new strategy of actually activating our recreation centers well beyond how they've been activated to date. We think in this very challenging time that we can find new and creative ways of doing things. That's not just a throwaway rhetorical line. And I think one of them is this new Rec Connect strategy we have for our park systems. The green tech efforts, this is where we're seeing job growth and job retention. We have the most aggressive solar program, the most aggressive efforts in the United States on recycling, the most aggressive alternative fuel strategies on biodiesel in the nation. And we've got a new strategy to electrify our vehicle fleet, not just municipal, but private, by becoming the epicenter in the United States of America for electric vehicles. A lot of exciting things happening in the green tech space.
And our next caller, I believe, is one of Governor Schwarzenegger's economic advisors. David, good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning. Well, this is David Crane, and I'm an old friend of the mayor's, and I have the greatest respect for him.
Thank you, David.
But I just want to clarify a couple of comments that he made earlier. First of all, and this is really on behalf of the governor and the legislature, the budget that was just passed includes a very significant economic stimulus plan. That's comprised of 8 points, all of which are very beneficial to San Francisco in particular, two of which is an elective single sales factor, corporate income tax, and a new higher tax credit, are particularly important for San Francisco enterprises ranging from small biotechs to large employers like Google, Genentech, and The Gap. In fact, the idea was first hatched in the Illinois State Senate when now President Obama was there in 1998. So it's an 8-point plan. You can learn much more about it if you go to either the legislature's or the governor's website. And the second thing is, I also want to correct something about the vehicle license fee. The budgetary problem in California was caused not by the vehicle license fee, but by California's reliance for 50% of its personal income taxes on 1% of the taxpayers. And that is the reason that Speaker Bass and Pro Tem Steinberg formed a commission with the governor to report back on a new tax system for California by April 15th. The problem is volatility, not the vehicle license fee. So I just wanted to clarify those two things. And but as a San Franciscan, I'm very proud of our mayor, and he's made it a more livable city. So I'm pleased to end on that note.
Hey, David, I appreciate that. But let's—I mean, I agree with you. The 144,000 taxpayers paying over 50% of the income tax in the state, and I do acknowledge and the challenge in terms of that. But let's be candid here. tens of billions of dollars were left on the table because the governor moved forward by rolling back that VLF. That has certainly exacerbated the budgetary conditions and made it much more challenging. And I think it's indicative of why you guys rolled back a portion of the VLF, is you recognize that you couldn't move forward without bringing it back to a higher level. So I think it's fair to say it hasn't helped the budget by any stretch of the imagination, that rollback of the VLF.
David, we thank you for the call. Let me get another caller on here about, well, the marriage business. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, I appreciate the getting on the air, and Mr. Newsom, I enjoy your discussion, your position. So, one thought on the same-sex marriage position, and actually was raised by one of the previous emails, and that is, why don't we get the state completely out of the business of deciding what marriage is, and establish a level playing field across all people that everyone's comfortable with, that the state endorses a set of relationships and both contractual, financial, legal, and get out of the business of deciding what a quote, marriage is, and leave that up to people's own personal religious beliefs and organization.
Now, again, I hear this more and more. I think it's a very sound argument, and I think it certainly would be a legitimate compromise. Here's my two cents. I don't want to dilute the institution of marriage by sort of bringing marriage down to the status of civil unions for everybody. I want to actually increase the opportunity for everybody else to be elevated into that institution if they deem that institution an appropriate one for them. And so that's why I believe in the notion of marriage equality, not taking marriage as we know it and reducing it down to something called a civil union. I can't imagine having asked my wife to marry me if I went down on my bended knee and said, hey, will you civil union me? It would not have been well received, as you can imagine.
We thank the caller. So you don't want to declare before the hour is over?
By the way, David Crane's doing a great job at the state. I'm not just indulging him in a reciprocal way. My frustration with the state economic stimulus plan, it's been drowned out with all the budget crisis and the finger pointing and the lack of resolve and resoluteness that we need now in the state. I understand how frustrating it must be for them. It's frustrating for me when folks don't know what we're doing at a local level, how it must be frustrating for David and his team who's been leading that charge at the state level. But look, these are challenging times. It's now more important than ever to communicate what we're doing, what we're not doing, to have a chance to have these type of dialogues. And Michael, this was a very productive hour. I appreciate the opportunity to have heard from the listeners and the callers and the emailers.
Appreciate your being with us. And actually, you want to give a plug for your radio show? You might as well.
Yeah, Green 960, 11 o'clock every Saturday on the Gavin Newsom Show.
On the Gavin Newsom Show. And thank you for being on the Michael Krasny Show. Or this is Forum with Michael Krasny is really what it is. Thanks to Mayor Newsom. Thanks to you, our listeners. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Kevin Guillory and Tina Lauerberg, and our engineers, Danny Bringer, our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about a movie that was made here in San Francisco, and we're also going to talk, as I said, about black migration from San Francisco. The movie is about that as well. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.